that follow-up is what keeps it going. Because if you just turn them loose and have a heart-to-heart, it can fizzle and die unless there is follow-up. You really have to have a committee of people that are willing to do that part. Because I've heard people say, well, we tried heart-to-heart and it didn't work. And then I'll always say, well, did you have follow-up? Did you have any accountability? Since it is a church function and it's part of your women's ministry, you have a right to make them accountable. So you call somebody and the woman said, well, I call my partner 3 times and she's never called me back. We ask for them to call once a week, and this is all in your brochure, and to talk, to see each other once a month. We make no requirements for what they do. We've had some who have taken on, one senior, maybe we've taken on 3 or 4 juniors, and she'll have sort of a little Bible study time. We do have seniors that take more than one junior, and she might do something with each of them separately, and she'll do it, you know, suited to whatever it is they need.
Would it be possible for someone who was sort of in the middle, to be both a senior and a junior?
I'm going to come to that, yeah. We've got, for instance, I remember one gal in the first year we did it, she's just one of these that does all kinds of crafts, and she's a real mothery, homemaking kind of person, and she had two, and they made bread, and they made jam, and then she showed them how to make tiles for Christmas gifts, you know, do them and fire them and whatnot. They did everything. Sometimes people just go to lunch. The one thing we stress, and we try to put this in the directions, is that the younger person should not assume that this partner is now a free babysitter. Because most of us don't want to do that anymore. Now, if the senior wants to do it, let her volunteer and say, well, why don't you go out for an evening and let me do it. But we don't, lots of times seniors are afraid that's what's going to happen. That if they say, oh, I want to be a friend, that the next thing you know, they'll be called to come over and babysit and they don't want to do it. The other thing that we stress, it is not an in-depth counseling service. We don't want these kids, these younger ones, to think that this person now is going to solve all their problems and is going to be overwhelmed with really complex problems. I will just digress slightly to say that we have, along with Heart to Heart, we have developed a core of women, maybe about 15 women, that we have given consistent Bible study, counseling techniques and training to. And they are over here, we call them our caregivers or our intensive caregivers. And when we find someone that is in need, for instance, this year, Gail called me and she said that a woman had signed up for Heart to Heart, but we knew, and she even indicated on her profile sheet that she wanted a lot of attention. Well, we called her and told her we thought that probably Heart to Heart was not the place for her, but that we would plug her into one of these women that could really minister to her in a more knowledgeable, intensive way. And that's what we've done with her. But those women are wonderful, because when I get someone who comes to me and I meet with them once or twice, I will turn them over to them. And they can talk to them 10 times a day if necessary. Even when we send someone to a professional counselor, we will often have one of these women come alongside and help them. So that's a step up from Heart to Heart. So we have provision for that, and we don't want the Heart to Heart person to think, oh, I'm going to go into this and I've got to solve their marriage and I've got to do all kinds of things, because most people aren't equipped for that. We have them fill out a profile sheet. Now, the one thing I would add to this profile sheet is, how long have you been a Christian? Because you want to get an idea of the level of maturity of each. How long have you been a Christian? And this sheet is really on an 8x11. It's this size, but we reduced it for this. And you can add to it what you want. I've seen other people's, and they have things on it that we don't have, you know. So you can put on whatever suits you and your situation. But this is very helpful, because what we try to do is match up people on the basis of maybe 2 things in common. If you have someone who's newly divorced and we have a senior who's divorced, or you have a career person and you have a career woman who's wanting to be involved, or you have someone who's in a blended family now, and we have someone, an older woman, who's gone through that experience. So we try to put them together on the basis of two things in common, if possible. Your age range is in here. Up to 35, generally, we consider that. Now, that's going to be different for some of you who may not have enough older women. But we have a good mix. So up to 35, we consider a junior. 35 to 45, we feel can go both ways. Some of them want a senior. But they're great for someone, a junior. So some of them have two relationships. Say, and I think even under 35, you can have a relationship with someone younger. I've already said that. And then over 45 is senior. I had to laugh. I have a friend in Hawaii when we were out there a couple of years ago. She said to me, "Well, Vicki, I don't know, what am I? You know, am I junior senior?" I said, "How old are you, Terry?" She said, 47. I said, 47? What do you want? I mean, when do you become a senior if you're not a senior at 47? But see, she still wanted someone for herself, and that's fine. The trouble is you don't have enough of seniors as a rule to go around. That's one reason I developed the series that have become ultimately the book that I have here now, to encourage seniors with the biblical passages that relate to Titus 2, homemaking and mothering and all of the rest of it, so they would have a biblical basis for the kind of counsel that they'll be required to give. They, you know, it's kind of scary to get into this kind of relationship, and you think, what if they ask me something and I say the wrong thing? Not only that, lots of times we have, from our own background, we have ideas that are wrong. And we need to be sure that our ideas are biblical and not traditional or not our own family background or something, so that this will give them some kind of a basis. And what happens when it's not working? Committee member calls and the girl says, "Oh, well, we talked one time on the phone, but she doesn't ever call me, or we've never been able to meet," or something. Then you question, you say to the young girl, "Well, have things changed in your life? Have things gotten busy?" "Well, I had to take a part-time job." And so that's one thing. Then you check with the older person what's happened. Say, you always give two sides. She may have started out with a great deal of enthusiasm and then all of a sudden got a sick husband, or else had a marriage coming up of a child that she hadn't expected, or, you know, there's a lot of things. And then in that case, you can just say, "Well, would another year be better for you? Do you feel like this is, you know, you've had so many extra pressures that you're not able to really keep this up? Should we reassign your junior and then maybe you'd be ready another year?" So do it gently but kindly. And then usually they'll say, or else they'll say, "Well, no, I really want to do this and I will make time to do it." See, but then just keep on checking. But it's perfectly okay to reassign. What do you do if the senior, you realize, is not really qualified to be a senior? You know, she's not been saved long, or she's kind of ditzy, or, you know, she's just not real quality material, but obviously she wants the relationship. Gail loves to talk, so she will talk for hours on the telephone. But she will sort of find out, well, what were you looking for in the relationship? And sometimes she's found out that the senior is really looking for a senior. You know, she's a senior herself, but she's looking for someone to sort of be that to her. What we've done sometimes is if we have a junior that we know is mature spiritually, we will tell her the situation and pair her up with this senior. Because even if she isn't as mature spiritually, she does have wisdom from life that she can communicate. And you don't want to destroy her or disqualify her because she's not quite what you think she ought to be, because you want to see her come along as well. So we've sort of clued the junior in and asked if she would be willing to be in that kind of a relationship, knowing that spiritually she is the one that will be the stronger one. Sometimes you have to just say to somebody, "I don't know if this is, at this time, this would be the best thing for you, you know, but boy, you really have to be careful. try everything else first and ask God to give you wisdom. A lot of prayer, do a lot of praying. One of the things Gail says is do a lot of praying over the matches. They really do. Now, we have found that a one-year commitment is a good length of time. Some people have told me that they've tried 6 months, but I think that you need time to sort of get used to somebody that you don't know at all. And most of us gravitate towards somebody that's like us, you know. And if they're not like us, you need a little bit more time. We had a situation a couple of years ago where a young woman was paired up with an older woman, and the older woman is a neat lady. She's a widow and very alive and interested in traveling, doing all kinds of things. But this young little snip, you know, she said, "Oh, I don't want to have her as my partner." So Gail said, "Well, listen, why don't you just try it a couple of times?" Well, after the first conversation, she came back and she said, "I was really very silly." She said, "I think we're going to have a great time." See, so we don't change it just because somebody says they don't like it. The whole idea of this is to develop relationships with people that maybe you might not have ordinarily drawn to. We start out with promotion in September. We start in our general meetings promoting it. We use testimonies, especially testimonies of seniors, because the juniors are chomping at the bit. You don't need to encourage them too much, although we do both, but we really let seniors get up and tell what it's the blessing that's been to them. And then we have coffees. We have a coffee on a Friday and a coffee on a Saturday for working women, where we give them a chance to just mingle and share a little about themselves, like we have them answer a question. I'm not real good at this. I remember one question we did was, if your house burned down after your family, what one thing would you save and why? And see, you learn a lot about somebody from just their answer to that question. And I'm sure that you have other questions that you can use. And let people just share a little about themselves. And then you can, even at the coffees, you can say, are there any of you, if any of you here would like to pair up together, just come and tell us. And let them do that. But don't let them do it if they're just already friends and people that know each other. We try to discourage that. But in the coffees, we've seen people pair up just on the basis of that little revealing about themselves. Somebody might say, well, I have 4 children and I'm a grandmother, and this little girl over here is, it comes out of a family of 5, and she thinks, oh, you know, she'll sort of understand. And they might, just talking over coffee, and sort of just tentatively put feelers out, and if they want to, then you can sign them up then. But then most of the matching we do, the committee does. Occasionally I'll get a call saying, what do you think of so-and-so, and do you think that that would be a good match? But most of the time they do it completely on their own. Do you have any questions so far?
Do you have any insight for someone trying to start in a very small church?
Yeah, in a very small church, you're probably going to have younger seniors. And you're going to have to really persuade your older women that you need them. Then don't worry about the amount. If you only have 5 pairs, that's okay. And then next year there may be another couple more. You know, at least you've made provision for it. And what's going to happen is that these older women are going to talk to each other, and they're going to find that there is a place for their background and their knowledge and the things that they have learned just through life. And it'll take a little while, but you need to really woo them and make them feel that they're very needed. See, we've neglected that and paying the price for it. Did you have your hand up?
Well, yeah, I did. And I guess you sort of answered my question, because we have a lot of really wise women, ones that are in our church, and they're working. And what they have said to me is that they don't have time, because all they have time for is the home to breathe.
Mm-hmm. But you have to woo them. And one of the ways that I do it is I constantly speak from the Titus passage. See, that's your strongest evidence. And, you know, get the tape and let them hear the tapes. That's what we do lots of times. We suggest, or what you could do is you could ask if some, for instance, you have Sunday school time, maybe you could have a 6-week time where they came, or 5 or whatever, how many tapes you have, and let them listen to tapes that will motivate them and make them realize what women are supposed to do. You can use some of them that we've all done here, whatever, but you've got to motivate them from the scripture. I am absolutely convinced of that. There are great motivational speakers, you know, you've got Zig Ziglar and all the rest of them. But that kind of motivation won't last the way the motivation of scripture does. And when a person sees from God's word that this is what they are really supposed to be doing, and then they're encouraged with a method to do it, and they have all of that, then, you know, that's the kind of motivation that lasts. And you need to really impress upon these women that this is a responsibility only they can fill. See, the church has not done that. The church has generally, corporately, just used women for, you know, teaching Sunday school to the kids, and which is fine, and cooking the suppers and the banquets working in the nursery and that type of thing. But when you reach an age where you no longer wanted to do that, there wasn't anything. See, the church hasn't said, listen, we need you now. At this age, you are more valuable than you have ever been. And the next generation needs you. And we want you to be in charge of discipling and mentoring and role modeling and bringing these women along. See, instead there's been this, well, women are supposed to teach, women are supposed to do this, women are supposed to do that, and bringing in a worldly, ungodly bias that is not supported by scripture. Do you pay them?
Well, we were so early in our time.
See, we pay for child care.
Yeah, we do have to pay child care.
Yeah. It's in our budget.
In the church budget.
And we take an offering, so we help subsidize it. But see, my personal theory about women's ministries is that it should be considered so important by church leadership that it is supported financially. And what you usually have is women have a little bootleg ministry. You know, they have garage sales and cake sales, and they just go pitifully along with whatever they can scrape up. But that is not, I think church leadership should have the relationship toward a women's ministry that a husband and wife should have. A husband should provide for his wife a greenhouse for her to flourish in, where he provides for it and gives it his blessing and his protection. Church leadership should do that with women's ministry. It shouldn't be something they have to do on their own. But do they say that to the youth? And do they say that to the college department? And do they say that? See, why do they say that to women? But if church, if the leadership of the church is to provide for the need of all the members, why are women singled out to go it alone? Huh? Yeah, and just see, yeah. What they have to see is what Titus teaches, that women have a ministry to women which men cannot do and are not supposed to do, and the church should provide for it to be done. Because women, when women's needs are met, women give. I mean, it's amazing what our women give. When we have a retreat, I always ask for scholarship money for people that can't give. We always have more scholarship money given than we even need to use. You know, we say someone's going on a missions trip, I mean, the money just comes in. See, they have this idea that if women give, well, that comes out of the general fund, but it doesn't. Women will give from their own resources if they know their needs are met. And this is the thing. I mean, you need to go to the pastor and say, the responsibility was given to Titus, the pastor, to prepare older women who were then responsible to train the younger women. Are you willing to provide some kind of training for older women who want to do this? Because we would like to. Put it on his back and see what he says. And then say, you know, it's obvious that this is our job to do, and yet we don't feel supported by church leadership. And if you know any elders or whatever your governing board is, you need to get some of them on your side. I mean, you know what our women did, which was great? About 7 years ago, 8 years ago, the board, our women's ministry was a lot like a lot of them. They just had little circles that met once a month and had a Bible study, and it was diminishing all the time. So the incoming slate of officers decided to suspend all activities for a year and search all over the country for women's ministries that were successful. And they found several things, and they synthesized it and put it all together, and they found several things that were important. One was that women wanted more, not less. They wanted weekly, not monthly. Because you see, the Bible studies like BSF and all these others were meeting weekly and really meeting needs. Secondly, Bible study must be the focus, not crafts, not missions, not outreach of any kind. Bible study has to be the focus, or you will not have steady spiritual growth. You will have enthusiasm and you'll have, you know, attendance, but you will not have steady spiritual growth. Thirdly, women wanted diversity. Women are so creative and they have so many areas of needs. Now, you'll notice the Titus passage says we're to teach them to be good home managers, among other things. So we have, the first part of our program is Bible study. The second part are electives, which our own women teach, and they're on everything under the sun. They're on crafts, cooking, calligraphy, child rearing, handling teenagers, marriage enrichment, you name it. And we have our own women teaching it. Sometimes a woman will say, well, I don't know if I could do it alone. Then we team her up with someone else. The cooking class, we always get one person that is there the whole time. But then in the cooking class, for instance, she brings in someone every week to do a different specialty. So that gives a lot of people opportunity to do something without a heavy commitment. Then in the small group, there's 15 minutes of prayer and sharing. That's in the elective time. Yeah, in each elective time, they have 15 minutes of prayer and sharing. Now, all of this is going to be laid out for you very clearly in the book that's coming out in August. That's what that's all about. But what it's done is it has given women the opportunity to minister with skills they never thought of as ministry skills. And it has given us a much broader base of involvement than you usually have when all you ask of somebody is to lead a Bible study or lead a discussion group. So you have somebody who's a wonderful cook, and all of a sudden she can come and share that skill with a whole bunch of other women that want to learn it, and then have that time of sharing and prayer together that bonds them. Or you have somebody that is good at smocking or good at quilting or whatever. And they're able to use this thing, which is a hobby that they sometimes feel guilty about because they enjoy it so much. And all of a sudden, here's a place for them to plug right in church and use it. You see? So it gives you a much greater number of involved women than your usual women's ministry would do. See? Now, if you have a small church, you might have Bible study. Incidentally, in the Bible study, you want to avoid bringing people in from other churches to do it, because I really believe that God gives to each local body the gifted people they need. You've got to find the women in your church that are the teachers. You might find somebody who has a Bible study in her home or has gone to a lot of other Bible studies and really maybe just needs confidence and needs encouragement to try. And ask her if she'll teach 4 weeks. Maybe she's got a series she's taught elsewhere. I had a church I was helping out in Irving set up their women's ministry, and they said, well, who are we going to get to teach? Vicki, will you come and teach? And I said, that's the whole point, is not to have me. And they said, oh, but no one will come. And I said, look, if you will get your own women to teach, I'll come at the end of the year and do a session for you, but you've got to use your own women first. And they did, and I went, and I've never had to go back. You see? So you've got to encourage them that they have. So in Dallas, we have so many good teachers in every area that people are impressed with professionalism. And you know, you've got to discourage that, because you have wonderful women in your own group that can communicate in a unique way what God has taught them. And then the advantage is they're right there in church all the time. Those relationships are constantly there. One of the advantages of my position is that those women know there's always somebody they can come to in church. They always have an advocate. I didn't finish. Bible study electives. First, weekly Bible studies electives. And then they found that any church where they had a consistent continuity had a staff person for women, whether volunteer or salaried, preferably salaried. And what they did then was contact me, because some of them, I'd done retreats for them and stuff, and some of them had been under my teaching, and they said, would you consider this position if we can pass it by the elders? And my husband and I talked about it and realized that we already had our own ministry, Titus 2:4 Ministries, realized it would be at one church that I would be able to learn as well as use all the things that I was really believing women should be doing. So I agreed that we would do it on a part-time basis. I took a half-time. So what they did then, they were very, very smart. What they did then was they put together a proposal. They took a folder, and in it they put, they had taken a survey of the women of the church. They put the results of that survey. And all of this is in the book for you. They put the survey results. They put famous, they quotes from well-known women, women like Jean Hendricks, that goes to our church, incidentally, and B. Campbell, and some of these others. They put quotes, and they put Elizabeth Elliot, there were quotes, things like that. They put down what they proposed to do, the program that they would like to see, in effect. And they invited the operating board. All, there were about eight on the operating board. We have about 30 elders, and they rotate, and they're on the operating board 1 year at a time. And so they invited them to dinner with their wives, and they presented, after the meal, they presented the whole program to them. It's always good to reach men when they're not hungry, you know. And the men asked all the questions, and the women gave them the answers, showed them the need, let them know what they had done, and from that minute on, they had their support. So then it had to go to the finance committee, the budget committee, and a salary, you know, that was approved. At each point in the thing, they would call and say, well, this hurdle is passed, that hurdle is passed. And I kept saying, Lord, if you want me to have it, then you're going to take it all the way through. And I just had to hold it with my hands open. And the whole thing went through. But that's how they did it. They approached it very wisely. Let me just say something. You may think I sound militant when I'm talking to you, but never approach men with a militant attitude. When I give you the scripture, I'm very forthright about it, and I'm that way too with them. But if you approach men with a feminist, we got to have it because we're women, etc., you will lose all the time.
What do you do if within your church you're working on this and you do have the militant women, and I see them
have a... They're going to be a hindrance. Yeah, they are going to be. Well, I think you've always got to remember that, well, honey is going to get a lot more than vinegar. You know that. And you need to just say, let's try it our way first. You know, if you have that kind of person, if then what you need to do is have women that have the authority to represent the women. And they're probably hurting you because the men's backs are all up.
Exactly.
Yeah. The men hate it.
Where do I go from here?
Well, you do a lot of praying. You need to get some other women. What you all need to do, if you want to do something, is to get two or three women who will share your vision and start praying with you. That's the key. I think Satan fights the ministry of women more than anything. Remember, in Genesis 3:15, it says there will be enmity between you and the woman. It's interesting. And I have found more hindrances and blocks whenever there is anything for women. And I really believe it's I honestly do. I'm not one of these that, you know, see Satan and everything. But honestly believe that there is a effort constantly to frustrate and to misinterpret and to do all kinds of things to block it. I really do. That's why when we approach it, we must approach it from the viewpoint of godly women that have the confidence that Scripture gives to ask for what we have really the right to ask.
Where does the pastor's wife?
Now, the pastor's wife, it's wonderful if you have her support. If you can get her to be in your prayer group, it would be great, because she's the one that sleeps with him at night. I mean, don't forget that. Let's face it. And you need her support. You may get a pastor's wife who will not give it, and in that case, you have to keep on going. But always constantly let her know that you want her there, have her in on some of your decision-making things. Welcome her, ask her if there's any area she would like to particularly do, but don't give her the impression that she's going to be responsible for it all. Because I honestly, and I advise pastors' wives, that if they have a vision for women's ministry, they need to be there in the vanguard getting it going, but as soon as there are people that are good to replace them, they need to step down from leadership. Because that way they can't be accused of pastor and his wife running the whole church. And when people get mad at her, it reflects on him, and it's really very touchy. But it's wonderful if the pastor's wife... It was really interesting. We had a pastor's wife when I went there. Incidentally, I'm full-time now. It went up. In fact, the pastor, the first pastor we had, came to me at the end of the first year, and he says, you're going to have to make a decision about full-time, because he could see already how things were going. So I upped it to 3/4 time, and now I'm on full time. But what they do, which is really wonderful, is that they recognize that the hours I put in at home to study, because I can't study at the office, it's impossible, and I study at 5 in the morning, so I'm not going to be at church then, but they count all my study time as time. So I don't have to be in the office 5 days a week. In fact, I'm only there 3 days a week. You see? But what was I telling you? Oh, the pastor's wife. Oh, the second pastor's wife we had was very insecure. I don't know what her problem was. She was very talented in her own areas, but she just was not. I don't think she'd ever been to a church. She had never been to a church that had a minister to women. And she just, we tried to tell her, you know, fit in. We had her do her seminars. We had her do everything. Well, anyway, she accosted me one day and she said, we have a sort of unwritten rule on our board that we never have any staff wife on our ministry board, women's ministry board, because it's a conflict of interest and time. So even if we have a staff wife that's involved in women's ministry, we never give her a board position. So she apparently spoke to someone and said, when are they going to invite me on the women's ministry board? And this person said, probably never, because, you know, because of our little unwritten. So she stopped me one day and she said, Vicki, I want to be on the women's ministry board as a senior pastor's wife. And I said, well, fine, you know. I said, let me talk to the women. We were going to meet the very next day. And I always do that. I never say, well, I'll, you know, I just say, let me talk to my board. So I thought that they would be really, you know, happy about it, because she was very personable and warm. And so when I told them, I said to her, well, are you talking about ex officio? And she said, well, I would like to be able to vote. So, see, she was wanting a board position. So I brought it up before the board. And what we do at the end of in May is we have a get-together, a luncheon or something, and the old board and the incoming members. See, we stagger the board. Half go off 1 year and half another, because we put them on for a 2-year term. And that way we have continuity. You see. So the old off-going members were there, and then the new board. And I told them about their request, and I said, how do you feel? Well, they all sat there very thoughtfully, and then each of them expressed their opinion. And the answer was, we really don't want her on the board, but I said, we can't get out of it, is what I said to them. And they said, so if she is on, it'll have to be ex officio. That was it.
What was the fear?
The fear was that she would be, along with me, the only person that was on all the time. And they did not want my position weakened, which I thought was interesting. I hadn't even thought of that. But they did. And they said, she will be all the time on the board. And they considered that threatening to the autonomy that the women's ministry had. Isn't that interesting? And they figured this out themselves. I was very, I said, we have to do it and we've got to work out something. So when I went back, I met her for lunch the next week, and I said, oh, incidentally, and I told her that we'd be happy to have you, but the board unanimously felt that it should be ex officio, because the dirty work was mine. But anyway, and she said, oh, okay. And she came one time is all she ever came to the board.
I have a couple questions to ask you about the heart. One of them is, how does your heart committees function? We have eight readiness.
Yeah. Sure, you could do that. They work together pretty much. Now, see, what they do, they have a big blast in March. They have a women's ministry tea. And the board does all of that. And they recruit some of the others in to help with the food. But they really do beautiful food. And all the silver, everybody brings silver. We have the church silver, and they have lace tablecloths and fresh flowers. And they really make it nice. And it's for anyone in Heart to Heart and anyone interested in learning. It's for the church women. And they make that a very special time. And now it's sort of become a tradition. I think it's 3 years or so they've been doing it. Mm-hmm. And how to do it, and even the food and everything. All of that's in there. Lots of detail you have in there. Oh, it's a good question. Let me just say the whole women's ministry program. It's not just Heart to Heart. That's why it's hard for me to separate the two, because it's all part of it. But the whole women's ministry program has drawn our women together. In fact, the whole church recognizes. I've had elders stop me and say, I can't tell you what women's ministry has meant to the whole church. What we have, to me, is really interesting. I think women, there's a myth about women that if you give them an inch, they take over the whole church, And if you give them a little power, they are going to be up there in the pulpit, this kind of thing. This has absolutely not happened. What I have found is that if you give women significant ministry with responsibility plus authority, that they will be so creative and so satisfied doing what they're doing, because they feel it's important. We do not have, and I hope, I have to really say, Lord, let it keep going. We have never had one bit of problem in the 7 years I've been there with cliques, with women jockeying for position, with women jealous of what somebody else is doing, with malingerers that don't do their job. We have not had one bit of trouble. In fact, we use women's ministry to recruit for the whole church. We aren't meeting in the summer. We had a Saturday special last Saturday. I wasn't there. A Saturday special where we had one of our women, whom we've never had before, come and teach a Bible lesson. And then we had four electives for people to choose from. The last count I heard was like 75 to 80 people had signed up for that. And that was from 9:30 till 2, because they have an elective where they really finished something, like they were painting shirts or T-shirts, or they had one or two were spiritual and the others. But I got word, we have an annual church business meeting is on the last Sunday in June, and they always have a church picnic afterward. And so they sent word to me, could the women supply the cookies? Well, ordinarily in women's ministries, we would just send around a sheet and everybody would sign up. But we didn't have it. Because this is so, I called the woman in charge of hospitality, and I said, Vicki, we need to supply about 2,000 cookies. And that would be, if we ask for 60 from each person, 5 dozen, maybe 33 women. I said, so will you send a sheet around on Saturday? And then she says, if I don't get enough, I will call a list of women I have who always say yes whenever we ask them. And so I left it in her hands, and that was it. And I know that on June 29, there will be 2,000 cookies. I don't have to check on it, and I don't have to worry about it. It's all done. She'll take care of it. I can't hear you. They come anytime they want to. We invite them. And in fact, we send out, we have brochures that we send out for people to register every session with everything that's listed so that they can sign up for what they want. And we have all of that done. And all of that's in the book. There are samples of that. And we invite them all. They come all year long. They're able to fit in all year long. Now, the heart-to-heart, we have found in the first year we sort of plug them in all year long. But then that means one person's year ends here and another one's end, and it's really confusing. So what we do with heart-to-heart is have our whole recruiting and everything in the fall, and that lasts till the following year. Now, if people come in and they want to get into the program, we tell them, you know, we're not going to be starting again until the fall. But if we do have a stray senior somewhere, you know, or something, and we feel that there's a real need, we might do something to plug them in, or we might plug them in with one of those women in that special group. See, I'll have somebody come in, and, she's been one of the singles, and, I had this relationship for 10 years with this man. And now she's sort of, he wants to marry her, but she doesn't want to marry him because she doesn't think he's a spiritual leader, see, now. So I said to her, are you sleeping with him? You know, you have to, they always have these little euphemistic terms, but you've got to get it right. Well, yes. And I said, and at what point did you decide that he isn't spiritual enough? You know, it's interesting. Well, then she ends up telling me that in the last 4 years she's been coming to women's ministries, and she's realized she has been growing, and she's realizing what she's doing is wrong, and she's wanting out and doesn't know how to get out, you see. And so I always have them, if they are willing, with an act of their will, renounce what they are doing and tell the Lord that they accept his forgiveness. You need to get them to do 3 things with their will: to renounce the sin, to accept God's forgiveness on the basis of 1 John 1:9, because he takes away not only the sin but the guilt, and the guilt is what hinders them, you see. And the third thing is to, with their will, commit themselves to obeying God. And I always have them do that with me there as a witness, and then I pray for them. And then I do everything I can, using all the resources that we have, the people, whatever, to help them stay true to that commitment, you see. And so in that case, I will usually ask, would you like to have somebody that will be just able to sort of encourage you? Because it's going to be hard for you to give up this relationship. And then I will plug that person in with one of our caregivers. See?
Do you still have such a thing as monthly meetings?
No.
I can tell you how much I needed to do that. I have had your information, and 1 year ago, we have a smaller church, a very rapidly growing church. Mm-hmm. We have resources, but it's difficult to mm-hmm. get things going. We have done nothing but have monthly meetings with our women's ministry. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know it. Everybody is.
So, some time ago, I found your report, and I thought we had discovered a gold mine. We took it letter by letter, and we tried to apply it. And I felt so good. We had little groups of Bible studies, and lectures, and all kinds of things. And all of a sudden, I told people, I said, how about
a monthly meeting?
And I said, first of all, I said, I don't have the energy to plan that anymore.
You see, but you see, we do it because we all get together in the weekly meetings. The first half is all together. The Bible study is all together. Both times, morning and evening. Or they come in the evening. It's the same Bible study. Yeah, but you do need a time when they're all together. Because that gives you a sense of, I'm part of something in the whole church. I'm part of something bigger. But what you have to do in a church where you already have an old form is you can't offend all these people that have been blessed by, they think they've been blessed or they have been blessed by this old format. So somehow you have to absorb that in. Now, if you set up a women's ministry board, then you need to ask the person in charge of this old form if she would be willing to serve on the board and be in charge of that area and let them continue that, but only under the umbrella of women's ministry. Then whoever wants to go to it can go, and usually it sort of peters out and dies, but you have not kicked them out. Do you see what I'm saying?
We actually did end up doing that. We just started having monthly lunches with
devotionals. Yeah, but the younger women are not going to that, and so the older women have been committed to that format, and they still want it. Well, if you say to them, we're not going to do it your way anymore, you're going to lose them, and they're the ones you want to keep. But you want to get them into a new mode of thinking. So you have to sort of train them. You've got to motivate them from Scripture. You've got to give them the kind of thing I've been giving you for a couple of days, for them to realize that they are a resource that the church desperately needs, and young women need them, and they need to look at themselves from another viewpoint. Part of this is because the church has neglected to really encourage women that they have value once they were through doing the grunt work.
What do you do with an attitude of younger women being snooty with the older women?
Well, we haven't had that. What we have found, on the contrary, is that as these younger women have gotten to know the older women, they love them. They absolutely love them. They call them about everything. One of my board members called me, former board, she called me and she said, this was interesting. We have a young woman. A lot of them have fertility problems. It's just infertility. It's amazing. And one of these sweet young girls, I remember when she was married, stopped me one day in the Hakarta and she said, we just found out that I'm having triplets. And I said, oh, Amy, isn't that wonderful? And she looked at me and she said, thank you for saying that. She said, everybody else has gone, oh, like that to her. And here she is wanting children so much, So one of the women that used to be her heart-to-heart called me this week and she said, Amy just called and said that she had a sonogram and she's got two girls and a boy. And, we need to, but see, she made a point of calling Elizabeth to tell her. Because Elizabeth is sort of her mom there. And then they pass it on to me, see? And so there's that sense amongst all of us. We had really a sad thing. A man called me this week, just the week I was leaving. And he told me his name, and his wife has faithfully come to Women's Ministries on Wednesday night. Just right from the beginning, she's 51 now. And just a career woman, just a neat lady. And he said, Lois wanted me to call you. We are in the hospital. They're taking tests, and they're taking a bone marrow test in a few minutes. And I said, what is wrong? And he said, well, she's just not been feeling well, and there may be a possibility of leukemia. Well, it was such a shock. So I said, I'll call some of her friends. So I called this one woman that is real close to her, and she was so upset. I said, you know who her friends are. So she called them. And then sure enough, the report came back that it was this acute myelogenous leukemia, some terrible thing. And I called her and didn't get her because I was going to stop and see her. And I was in my office, and before I knew it, there she was at the door. And she came in to see me. They'd gone to see the pastor because he had a daughter die of leukemia. They'd gone to see him, and then they came over to see me. And, I just sat there and I said, Lois. And she was saying, I'm worried about... this, and I said, Lois, don't project into the future, because grace is only for the moment. and you'll be there in the future. But don't look at the future with the grace you have for now, because it's not enough. And the worst thing that you can do is let your imagination go crazy. All of us do. And then you think, I said, that's like standing at the bottom of a flight of stairs and trying to, and think, how can I get to the top in one jump? There's no way. You have to just trust the Lord that He's going to be for you then, just the way He is for you now. But, you know, I sat there and in tears. I just, it's, you know, looking at it, I don't think it has a good prognosis at all. She's going into chemotherapy right away. Here's a woman who a month ago, there wasn't a chance that you'd even think of that. But it was so wonderful to think that they could come, that there's a place for them to come. I have to tell you this, it's just so funny. When I first went there, I had an office up in the annex next to the children's department, and then they asked me if I would like to move down to the main administration building because they wanted another. I was wonderful because the bathroom is right there. I used to have to run down two flights of stairs. So anyway, I loved being there. I was right involved with everything. I was right next to the guy who became the associate pastor, and he and I just get on awfully well. So he came to me in, what is it now? Well, he came to me in February, and he said, we are creating a new position for the woman who had been the pastor's secretary so that he could pick his own secretary. And he said, we need an office for her. And he said, well, we want, you know, would you be willing to move over to the chapel building? I said, that crummy building, it really is the oldest building on campus. And he said, Vicki, they're fixing it up, and you'll be private over there, and people can come and see. I mean, he was giving me this big song and dance. So I went over with him, grumbling all the way, and he said, so we get to the building, and it had been used as a school for a while, and there was this big room that the studs were already up, and they were dividing it into two rooms. And he says, and your secretary can come over here with you in this room. Well, I got there, and two of the walls were cement block. And I said, I will not be in an office that looks like a jail cell. You're going to have to do something with these walls. And he said, but, I said, I don't care. I don't want to come over here, number one. And if I come over, I want it at least to look, women come in and want a nice atmosphere. So they got an estimate and they fixed the walls, both in my room and the secretary's room. So that was a start. Well, they told me I couldn't have any money, couldn't even solicit money from the women, which I knew they would give for me to get nice furniture and get the whole place fixed up. So we were out to dinner that Sunday with a young couple, and I was telling them that I had this purely functional old desk, and I said, I really like to get something that looks more like furniture and stuff. And in the end, this guy said, let me get the desk for you. And then we went back and looked at the room, and it has this hideous old carpet, brownish, and it was torn, and it was just, the whole building is that way, and they're supposed to put it in the budget, but the carpet, he said, what are you going to do with that carpet? I said, well, they're supposed to have, he said, get carpet. Another gal gave me the money to get two lovely overstuffed chairs. One of the girls is an interior designer. She went down and got all kinds of fabric and came back and let me make my pick, and I picked a real pretty sort of a red. And I have one wall, it's all windows, and someone else sewed them, and someone else helped put it up, and we put up this, just one long piece of fabric, and they put loops up, and it went up like this, and it has three drapes and comes down on the other side. Someone else made a flower decoration. Someone else made the pillows of the fabric, and my office is so beautiful when you walk in. And it was all, the women did it. And we did it. We were able to do it every time. When Dick comes over, he goes and he shakes his head like this. And he says, I said, just remember, it didn't cost you a penny. This is what I said to him every time he comes over. But, you know, when women walk in, they say, this is so peaceful. And they sit down, and it is such a wonderful atmosphere for counseling and for everything. But, you know, to me, it was such a perfect example of what the women will do when they're challenged or when they're deprived. I mean, here they thought I wasn't going to be able to have something nice, and instead, I said to Dick, this is a perfect example of making lemonade out of lemons. You see, because I didn't want to, it was a great lesson to me, because I didn't want to go over there. And instead, I've got the best office I've ever had. In fact, my elder said, you've got the nicest office on the campus. I really do. It is so pretty, and I really love being there. And it's, you know, it's a matter of Well, okay, I was submissive. It's really funny. When I was getting my evaluation, every year they give you an evaluation and they tell you what your raise and so forth is going to be. This young man, he's just the sweetest thing, and he's really learned a lot. He's been, you know, he was kind of narrow about women in some areas, and he's really been very open. So he was telling me all my qualities, etc. And then he said, and you know, he says, I can't believe I'm saying this, but he said, you really are submissive to authority. He said, you will fight and you will argue and you will give your viewpoint, but once the decision comes, you always go along. Now see, that is what we have to do as women. We have to give our input, but then when the stakes are down, then we need to be part of a team. And that's what has hurt women. But it's been a two-way thing because women really haven't been given the freedom. My style of leadership is that each of my board members has their job description and they know what the area of responsibility is, but I give them authority within that to be creative and to do their thing. I don't say, and this is the way you have to do the luncheon, and this is the way. They come up with all kinds of ideas, and great, they're responsible for it, but then they feel, I really contributed to this. I brought my own initiative, my own imagination, and that really gives them a sense of worth. You really need to praise them. Thank them for what they do. That was a good job. You did a good job on that. That was a great luncheon. You really do that very well. That prayer was so meaningful. In fact, and I always, during the year, over and over, I will say to the women, this luncheon is as good as it is because Vicki has organized it. Let's thank her. Or I'll have the whole board come up and have everybody recognize them and thank them. We always give little gifts. We have a limit of $5. Little gifts at the end of each session to all elective leaders. Recognition. Just a little thank you. It might be the centerpiece that we have for the luncheon. It might be a pot of African violets or something like that. And we'll use it double duty. We'll have it for the luncheon and then we'll tell everybody to take one home, all the elective leaders. The end of their term in office, I have this right in my budget. We buy some sort of gift for outgoing board members, and we have a $25 limit on that. We do not pay anybody honoraria that are church people. That's their ministry to our church. If somebody comes in from the outside for something, the only thing we do that for is when we have missionary women speak during missions conference, and we always give them a gift, a personal check, so that they can just buy something for themselves. But if anybody from the outside comes in, we always pay them. One of the things that I think is disgusting about the whole women's ministry thing is this idea of, well, it's only a woman and her husband supports her, so you don't have to pay her anything. Labor is worthy of his hire. And so when somebody comes in, I have a letter on my desk right now. They want me to go, it's about a 40-mile trip, and they're saying, do you charge anything, or is a love offering sufficient? Well, I'm going to write back and say, no, it's not sufficient, because I'm not going to run the risk of making that trip. In fact, this to me is a principle. I had an opportunity to kick off a women's ministry in a town about 45 minutes away. And I had done a retreat for them. I'd done a seminar for them. I mean, so I wasn't new to them. And when I got out there, they had a little Carnation corsage at my desk, plus a church cookbook. You know, those cookbooks are all the same. They all have the same recipes in them. I've got 10 of them. Anyway, I thought, well, this was a nice touch, you know. And so I gave my message. It took me all of Saturday morning and part of the afternoon, plus my preparation time. Well, that was it. And I never got anything in the mail, nothing. So 2 weeks later, I called the woman who was in charge, and I said, this is a little embarrassing for me, but do you have a policy of not giving an honorarium to your speakers? And she said, well, we give them a little gift. And I said, that's okay for someone who's a member of your church. That's their ministry. But if you call someone in from outside, you need to acknowledge their service to you with some kind of money. And she was very, very nice about it. And about 2 weeks later, I got a letter saying, thank you for bringing to our attention a very grave oversight. And they had a nice check in it. See, because I think that's very wrong. I really do. And it's hard to be in the position of the one getting it and saying it, because it sounds like you're greedy, you know. But to me, it's a principle. They would never do that to a man. See, they never would. And we need to really... we need to really be very sensitive to that. We've gone in 100 directions.
Do you find that women sort of pick and choose in the busy world? You know, like, do they just do heart to heart, or
Oh, some do. Yeah, some are in heart-to-heart that are not in regular women's ministry. That's why we recruit in some of the Sunday schools and all. See, we have a big church, and our church is kind of different. Do you know anything about, have you ever been to Northwest Bible Church, Rachel? Yeah. It's a church that, when Jim was there, yeah. But it's a church that a lot of the people from it came out of denominational churches. There are a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, good income. We have the average as well, but we have that kind of, you know, sort of independent. I'm always reminding our women that the people that come to an independent Bible church are independent people, you know, and you're not going to put them all into a little box. So you've got to accept what they're willing to give. You've got to have standards. Well, I ask a woman to come on our board. I tell her it's a 2-year commitment. I ask her if she's involved in a lot of other things, PTA and all the rest. Are they going to be easing off in the spring? If they're not, I'll just say, well, I know this is too busy a time for you. We'll have to talk another time. But I tell them right up front that women's ministry has to be their priority commitment. And see, that way, in fact, I had a woman come on, really a neat gal, and all of a sudden, and I'd said that to her, and all of a sudden I found out that she wasn't going to be at board meetings because she was in a tennis tournament thing. So one of the other women told me, I said, what do you mean tennis tournament? And she said, well, she's really into that and they count on her and stuff. So I called her and I said, Mary, you know, what's going on? And she told me, and I said, well, Mary, you need to think about it and make up your mind, because we have to meet on Thursday, and we have to have you there. So, and it's only once a month, you know. So she called me back, and she said, you know, you told me right from the beginning that it would have to be priority. And she said, I gave up some other things, but I realized I really hadn't given it priority. And I will. I have resigned, and I am going to give women's ministry priority. So I thought that was something. But see, I had been upfront with her, and so she was the one that had the problem. And I was willing to replace her. But we were not going to play with that. And you know, the interesting thing is that I never ask anyone to come on the board that, even if they cannot take the position, that almost without exception, they will say to me, I feel honored that you asked. You see, we've made that board position one that has dignity and worth. And so a person who is asked to be on it feels, you know, not, oh, the church is after me again, but I feel honored to be asked. And incidentally, we have women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s on our board. We have every age range. You don't want to lose touch with the young mother, because she's the one that's going to keep you in touch with this generation. So if you have all old people, you know, you're going to lose it. That's a good question. We do not have a democracy. We do not have a nominating committee, and we do not have an election. What we do is, starting in about January, the present board looks at who is going off in May, and we begin to talk about who would be a good replacement. Now, the person who is going off often has somebody that she's already been sort of grooming. So we bring up names, and everybody must be unanimous on it. If anyone has an objection, if one person on the board says, well, you know, I worked with her in such and such, and she was great at the start, but she didn't follow through, or she wasn't she was always late, or she didn't do her job, then we just drop it. We don't argue about it. We don't have a little faction for or against. We just drop it because it has to be unanimous. Once we agree on names, I personally call them or contact them and tell them what I ask. Are they a member of the church? If not, are you willing to become a member of the church? Because everything I say to you from now on is contingent on that. See? And then I tell them the position and what we're looking for. Tell them to think about it. Does it suit your gifts and your interests? And tell them to think about it, pray about it, talk to their husband, and call me back. Now, the chairman's position is changed every year and is selected from the women who are going into their second year on the board. And she is chosen by the present chairman and myself. That way we don't have any voting and we don't have any hard feelings. We don't have anything because we look for somebody who is good at organizing, who will be good working with me. Who, for instance, we had one possibility a couple of years ago. I had a couple of women that would have been good, but one of them talks me to death. You know, and I thought, I'll never be able to stand this. You know, I just couldn't. She just rattles all the time. And so I said something about it to the chair. She said, I know, and I agree. So we asked something else. The interesting thing is, I have had now 7 chairwomen. Every one of them is totally different, and every one of them has been unbelievably great. Now, this year, I'm in the same boat. I have another woman who is completely different from the one I had last year, and they're all just wonderful. And they all develop. What I always have them do at the end of each year is write what it has meant to them to be on the board. And it is so interesting. I have a sense of belonging that I have not had before. I've learned, I've lost the fear of speaking in public. I found that I have gifts that I've developed and didn't know I had. I've loved working with a team. It's been wonderful to make friends of the women on the board. I mean, there's this constant. They have grown in that position. But we do not have, I mean, that is something that is by invitation only and by appointment. We do not have the other. You don't have a lot of little cliques pushing their person. See, that may sound like it's kind of autocratic, but I really think it's, well, that's the way they pick elders too, isn't it? You're looking for spiritual qualities and you're looking for ability and you know, you're not just picking someone who's popular. And we don't have any member on the board that is an at-large member that does nothing. Everybody has a job. We do not have deaconesses. Did you say deaconess? No, we don't have deaconesses. Pardon me? No. I haven't been able to get them to that point yet. What?
How can
the church or women on all of this board is not elected by the church congregation? How did you get past the elders without having to have that done? It would be terrible if they were elected by the church congregation. Oh, no, the setup for women's ministry in our bylaws gives us that autonomy. We have an elder who is our elder, whom we hardly ever see because he never has any problem with us. And we are under, I report to the staff, I report to the associate minister. I give written reports and I give verbal reports. I turn in things to the pastor, goals, what's going on. I mean, all of this is going on, but I have the authority delegated to run women's ministry. And that is what churches should do. You cannot make it a congregational thing. What do they know?
On your election of the chairman position, you said that he was the director and the current chairman picked the next women. Mm-hmm. Did you?
And we invite her.
How did you come to that process rather than have the entire board?
I don't know how we did that, but it really works. It really works because I've had a board member come and say to me, I know who would be a great chairman next year. And I'll say to her, well, I'll be interested in your choice, but that is not a board position. That's not a board decision.
So you don't even want input from the board?
No, I don't need it. I've been working with that person a whole year. And the other, and the chairman has too, see. And so we talk about it together. And if I have an advisor on the board, sometimes I'll have an advisor that is a former member that just serves. And I you know, I'll call and I'll run it by two or three people. But it's, see, basically that person is going to work more closely with me than anybody. And so that's the consideration.
Mm-hmm. So, how do we...
Well, you're going to have to do it in a volunteer way. The thing that you want to go for is delegated authority to set up your women's ministry and do it in a way that will meet the needs of your women. You know, there's a church that I used to go to in Dallas that when the women's board meets, they have a deacon, an elder, and a staff man present. Well, do you know that dynamic is totally different than if the women are doing it alone? And it, to me, is the most insulting, degrading thing to feel like you can't do anything unless a man is there. See, I think that is carrying their concept of headship and leadership far beyond what the scripture intends.
One of the big problems we have in our women's ministry as it is right now is funding.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stay. We are in the church budget.
You're in the church budget. Okay.
And we're in the nursery budget. We do not pay for nursery, but we take an offering in women's ministry that goes into the general fund.
Okay. Well, we did come to this, and at your suggestion, we did approach the board about that, and they said, okay, just tell us how much
you need.
Present to us a budget.
Good.
Do it.
Overestimate. Okay, because they're going to cut you. Overestimate. Yeah. Yeah, and be sure that your nursery is paid. There's a lot of women that may not go to your church, but that are on Social Security that would willingly take a weekly job. In, you know, if they're going to get $15 or $20 to take care of kids for a couple of hours, they will do it. We're fortunate in that we have a woman that's in charge of nursery, and they do all the hiring. We don't have to. But in other churches where I work, we have a lot of these retired people that like to supplement it. But, you see, if you say, well, the nursery is going to be volunteer, why would a woman leave home where she has two kids and come and work with 10 kids? They just quit coming. See, and... Yeah, they don't want to do it. And it's just too hard.
Right. I'll
have time with
that. Oh, sure. Just actually in the last week, we finally were able to convince our board that we could pay one person to work Sunday morning, having my daughter. Mm. But we simply need this money. There's no money. And childcare is the biggest
thing. Our nursery, the guy in charge of the nursery tells me that women's ministry costs more in childcare than any other thing in the church because on Sunday it's all volunteer. All the church does it. We have volunteer on Sunday. We have, you know, couples come. I mean, we have sign-ups. So we have volunteer Sunday. But, and there are men, too, that do it. But on women's ministry, the whole thing is paid.
Now,
well, what we do is we have everything on Wednesday night. You see, we have a supper, church has supper, and then the children's choirs, the adult choir, the men's electives, the youth groups, and women's ministry all meets Monday night. So Wednesday night. So that way you don't have everybody coming 100 nights of the week.
Apparently we have enough people. Our problem would be, we have so many people tied up on Wednesday night with our Alana.
Yeah.
They want to be in women's ministry.
Yeah.
They have to come over to the
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, you might have to. See, you have to adapt to what you've got.
Sure.
You can't blow it all away, and you've got to adapt to what you have.
Yeah, so, does your church have small groups?
Oh, lots of them, and they meet Wednesday nights, too.
Okay.
The women have the Bible study, and then they have the small group.
We have small groups that meet all the time.
Well, some of them do meet during the week as well, but we have a lot on Wednesday night. Because Wednesday night, that way, the family isn't fragmented all week long.
Mm-hmm.
Say.
Do you
It's all in the book.
The book is coming
out in August.
And that will be available in bookstores.
It'll be available in bookstores, wherever, a Christian bookstore. And what you need to do is go to your Christian bookstore now and say, be sure that this book from, that you order this book from Moody. Take the flyer with you. Because they, it might be the kind of a book they'll think, well, it may not be popular, you know, and you need to get it because it is coming out in August. I did the final editing before I came, so it's gone to the printers. It'll be done. So, you've gotten far afield of Heart to Heart, but it's all part of the same program. You understand? Well, I think you need, I don't want to tie you up until lunch. So why don't you take a break and then lunch at 12. You might pray for me. I'm going to run into Colorado Springs to have a radio interview taped for about the book. No, just a radio interview for this local station. Yeah. So pray that it's, you know, fluent. Sometimes I just don't know. I have to look at the question she's going to ask and see. But
we have...
Well, just pray that, you know, it isn't, I don't want to go, I'm just depending on strength and my...